done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, yep. This is Tommy Chong. Right now, you're listening to the Hillbilly Horror Stories. Ooh, gotta listen to them.
Hey, guys, welcome to episode 398 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
As usual, we want to start off thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all you men, women, and service animals for everything you do on a daily basis for us.
Of course, we continue praying for you guys every single day. And, you know, I just am so proud of you guys for what you all do and the sacrifice that you make for all of us here. So thank you so much for making it easier for all of us to sleep at night. We love you.
Yeah, we just saw some body cam footage from down here in close to where we live in Florida, right outside of Orlando, of a burning building, and the police had their body cams on as they were just running straight into these buildings.
Yes.
And trying to save people.
Yes.
It's just, you never know what your job will entail when you leave for work that morning.
Correct. Mad respect for everybody.
Tracy, we've talked to several people this week that are struggling. They're in a bad place mentally, and they needed somebody to talk to. I've noticed a bunch of people in the group posting that they needed somebody. I was just looking at one while ago that they needed somebody to talk with and was hoping somebody was around.
Mm-hmm.
I am so glad that we have that group to where somebody feels comfortable and knows that they can put up a post like that and have somebody come to their rescue, more or less.
Yeah, I think I know which post you're talking about, and it was like right after they posted it, somebody was already saying, I'm here for you if you need to talk. So you guys are the best for sure, and we appreciate all that you guys do for everybody. If you need to talk to Jerry or I, we'd be happy to do that. Just send us a message. Also, if you want to do the crisis hotline, it's 988. You can text us 741-741. But guys, we're here for you, so don't hesitate to call.
All right, Tracy. Tonight's story, man, I don't need... it's got a combination of aspects to it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some UFO aspects, as well as some missing person aspects, some missing 411 aspects, and conspiracy theories.
Wow.
So, a little bit of everything. So, the first time that I actually heard this story, it was about 2 years ago, and I found it completely fascinating. I've wanted to do it for a while, but you know how things go. I get sidetracked, I find a different story, and I wasn't really sure how this one would go over, but after doing some of the stories we've done in the past month and a half, I think it will go over really well. So
good.
I put it back up on the front burner.
Good.
This is the story of Granger Taylor. So you're probably asking, who is Granger Taylor? Well, in a nutshell, he was a 32-year-old mechanical genius from British Columbia, Canada. He mysteriously disappeared in November of 1980. It seems simple when you put it like that, but the backstory on this is anything but simple. It's probably about as complex as you can get.
You know, of all these stories we've been doing, a lot of disappearing and things happen in the 80s, I've noticed.
Well, I think it happened all the time. It's just some of the,
of
the coolest stories
from
the 80s. So the best place to start here would probably be to discuss Granger's early years. Granger learned as a very young boy that he loved any type of vehicles. He loved being in them, being around them, but most of all, he loved tinkering with them. In fact, Granger was considered by most to be a genius when it came to mechanics. And you're going to see why here in a few minutes. Granger was a tall man. He had a little meat on his bones, we'll say. But he was a big teddy bear, according to anybody who knew him. He would typically be wearing stained clothes because of grease and oil. What you'd expect a farmer to wear because he did live on a farm as well. The farm belonged to his parents. And like I said before, it was up in the province of British Columbia in Canada. So Granger would often drive out to a near town of Duncan. He'd grab some food there and meet up with some friends. I guess that was the place to go from where he lived.
Okay.
Still not a very big place, Duncan was.
Okay.
Many times, he would bring his golden retriever, which was his best friend, Lady, along with him. You need to know, though, that even though Granger was known as a mechanical genius, he was also known as kind of an odd duck around town. He has friends, but only one really close friend. That would be Robert Keller. And that friendship happened almost by accident.
That's the way the best things happen, you know?
So Granger's, like I said, his eccentric behavior, we'll say, is what made him special to his friends. Robert first met Granger when he was 7 years old. Granger would have been in his mid-20s, about at that time. Granger would actually do some work with Robert's father. And Robert said that Granger was a very quiet guy. He was a little weird. At least that was his first impression of him as a 7-year-old. Here's this grown-up that acts more like a kid.
Oh.
So Robert said that people in town never really felt like he was a threat or anything like that. He was just a little strange. But the people who really knew him loved Granger. So Robert's dad helped Granger with a special project. Granger had found an old, beat-up locomotive engine, basically in the woods on the mountain up near where he lived.
Oh, just sitting out in the field, huh?
Yes, just sitting out. I don't know how it got there or what the story is behind it, but he cleared out a lot of the trees and built track to get that load of locomotive to his property.
He really wanted that thing, didn't he?
He took it apart and reassembled it. He installed 300 feet of track on the farm. And Robert, as a young kid, said that that was the most awesome thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Granger got this locomotive running. And he would drive them up the track and then put it in reverse and take them back down the track. So think about that.
Yeah.
You just find an old train and you figure out how to make it start working again.
That's pretty genius.
Actually, I believe it was a steam engine.
Oh, no way. Did it have steam coming out after he made it work?
I don't know. You're asking questions and I barely remembered it was a steam engine. So I don't remember. When Granger was 12 years old, he found and restored a one-cylinder car.
What? I didn't know where was such a thing.
Well, in the early 80s, yeah, I guess they had smaller cars. There was 2-cylinder cars and 3-cylinder cars.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I think that might have been more of a Canadian thing, maybe.
Oh, really?
I don't know that for a fact, so. At 17, he restored a bulldozer, which he would actually use to help all of his neighbors.
That is so cool. At such a young age to be able to do that.
I know, that's crazy. It gets better. He then restored a World War II Kitty Hawk airplane.
What?
It was then purchased and placed in front of a store right off the Vancouver Highway.
Okay, so they used it at like not a display. I guess a display.
I mean, yeah, it was like, I think the guy paid $20,000 for it.
Really?
Back in 1980.
So did it work or he just did it for looks?
I don't know if it actually ran. My guess is it probably didn't, but it also wouldn't surprise me if it did, considering the guy can fix bulldozers and locomotives and all that stuff. Remember the train, by the way. It would eventually go on display at the British Columbia Discovery Center.
Oh, that's really awesome.
So think about that. By the time he's like 20 years old, he's done restored a locomotive engine, restored a Kitty Hawk plane from World War II. At 12 years old, he's fixing a car. So there wasn't anything. He's kind of like Sling Blade when it comes to anything that had a motor in it. Granger had 7 brothers and sisters, but he was closest to his sister named Gay. She said that the two spent several long summers together just swimming and listening to music.
Oh, that's really nice.
With all this said, one thing that Granger was more fascinated with than vehicles was space. Yeah, remember, this is about the time when Star Wars had come out and had been out for a couple of years. Star Trek was starting to get big around this time. So in pop culture, science fiction and UFO stories and all that, you know, they'd been around since the 40s, obviously, but they were really big right after Star Wars came out. Granger then took 2 of those old, huge satellite dishes. You know what I'm talking about? Like, yes. People put in their yard, but it looks like the ones at the yes. TV stations. Mm-hmm. He took 2 of those, welded them together, and actually made his own flying saucer. Now, before you get too excited, this wasn't designed to go into space or fly right. or anything.
So he put one on top of the other, like a...
He had one on the bottom, and he had one on the top, but then he had some more metal in between to make it taller.
Oh.
So like a round piece of metal that both pieces would sit on.
So, I mean, did he make him taller, you think, because he's tall and he wanted to be able to get in it? Or?
Hold on a second. That's actually exactly what he did. He was had it set up in there. He had like a couch. He had a little wooden fireplace in there.
Oh.
So, yeah, he could go in there and just sit and think. That was his thing. He was going to go up there and just sit and think.
He is like a cool dude, man.
Oh, he wanted to know how spaceships worked. He wanted to know how they were able to, because he was a big believer, obviously, in UFOs. So it was like, you know, there's no doubt that there's UFOs. Mm-hmm. Now he wants to know how their ships work. Because, you know, it's the next step up, I guess, from everything that he's done. So Granger was fascinated with space and spaceships, how they, you know, were generated and operated. And all of his friends and family knew of his obsession, I guess we'll say, with this thing, especially Robert. So Granger would tell Robert that if we were one of billions of planets, then that meant that there were millions of planets that had life on it. So why not believe in UFOs and extraterrestrials?
I bet he wanted to go to each and every planet.
He just felt that the odds that we were the only ones in the universe was ludicrous. You waiting for the rapper to show up?
Yeah.
So I mentioned that Robert and Granger's friendship was almost by accident. Even though the two had known each other, knew who each other were, basically, they weren't friends until one fateful day when Granger stopped by the house to see Robert's dad. You see, Robert stayed in trouble, and he decided he was going to drop out of school in the 8th grade. On this day, of course, is when Granger comes by. He's visiting his dad, and he looks at Robert after finding out the news and said, "You know, I dropped out of school is at that same age, too."
No kidding.
Robert's dad said, "Yeah, but you're a freaking genius, and this guy here," and he points to Robert, and he said, "He's far, far from being a genius."
So Granger, thanks, Dad.
Granger looks at Robert and he said, "Well, what are you doing during the daytime?" And Robert said, "Oh, just kind of hanging out in the streets." And Granger said, "Well, why don't you hang out with me instead? I'll pick you up at 8 a.m.
Well, there you go.
So every morning he went by and picked Robert up at 8 a.m. to have him come work with him. Granger made it his personal mission to get Robert on track for a good life.
Good for him.
He would get him up at 8 a.m. every morning with a new project to kind of start on. Everything from picking up scrap metal to revamping vehicles. And one of the projects was to paint Granger's truck. It was a blue Datsun, and they painted it Pepto-Bismol pink.
All right.
Not something most guys would do in the 1980s.
Yeah, that is kind of a weird choice.
But that was Granger. So Robert's relationship with Granger would go on for about 3 years. Robert said that if Granger hadn't mentored him, that he would probably be in jail or dead by the time he reached 15 years old. Not only was he a mentor, he was his best friend. And this is where the story takes a turn.
Uh-oh.
Robert and Granger are pulling a wing off of that plane. Okay. That they were putting together. And Granger says, "I had a dream last night." Robert kind of laughs and he says, "Oh yeah, what was it about?" Granger said, "No, seriously. Someone came to me and told me that they need me. They needed my thoughts and expertise. And they want to take me with them." So Robert's thinking he's talking about the government, because this made sense to him with everything that he knows how to do, that the government might take him. And Granger, though, says, no, I think they're from another planet. So Robert was like, really? What planet? And he said Granger actually had the name of a planet. He doesn't remember what it was. But then Granger just said, well, you know what? It was probably just a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But the next day, Granger tells Robert that he had another dream. This one was just as vivid as the one the night before. They confirmed that they are definitely coming. They were coming on November 29th, 2 weeks away.
Damn, that got specific.
He said it's going to be on a really stormy night at a certain place. And Robert tried to convince him to tell him the name of the place, but Granger said that he couldn't tell anyone. They made it very clear that the location was secret as well as the time.
Ooh. What the heck?
Granger was very excited about this.
I bet Robert won, though.
No, he was not. But word started to spread around town, of course. Anyone who knew Granger thought, well, that's just Granger being Granger, you know. Nobody really gave it any kind of real validity or thought. 2 weeks later, November 29th, 1980, just as Granger said, storms started moving in. But not just any storms. These storms would eventually be called the storms of the century by local meteorologists.
Ah.
That morning, Granger and Robert spent most of the day doing, you know, just the same kind of work they were already doing together. He came, picked Robert up, seemed normal, but Granger seemed a little more excited and a little anxious. So he tells Robert, you know, today's the day. And Robert was like, yeah, it's a little overcast, but it's not a storm like you were talking about it was going to be. And Granger said, just wait for it. Because nothing had happened really yet.
Yeah,
it was too early. So here's the funny thing. Robert says that where they're located, they don't typically get too many thunderstorms that time of year. They don't get too many thunderstorms, period. But especially that time of year. But on this day, there was a supercell setting right over top of the city.
Oh, boy. Wonder what happened.
Funny you should ask. So Robert was about 15 years old. He had never seen a storm like this in his entire lifetime. Nothing was ever as bad as this was. He said it looked like it was midnight at noon. How could Granger have known that there was going to be this bad of storms on this day 2 weeks ago.
I mean, was he starting to believe what he said now since the storm was starting?
I think he was starting to at least buy in a little bit. So Robert asked him, he said, why are they coming during a storm? Well, Granger explained, that's when they're less likely to be seen or heard, is during a bad storm. If they actually came when it was a beautiful day, everybody sees it. So they can hide under the cover of the storm.
That makes sense.
So then Robert said, well, are they going to create the storm? And Granger's kind of looked surprised and said, you know, I don't know. Probably.
That was a good question.
So on this day, Robert only got to spend part of the day with Granger. He dropped Robert off, and then Granger goes home, and he writes a note and a will for his family.
What?
He taped the letter on the bedroom door for his stepfather to see. He then went into the living room where his stepfather was, and he interrupted his TV watching to say, you know what? I really admire you. I've looked up to you, and I want to thank you for being a really good role model.
And he was like, well, that was random.
Granger's mom was actually on a vacation to Hawaii at this time.
Oh, didn't want to take the hubby along, huh?
I don't know what to do. Here's what the note said. Dear mother and father, I have gone away to walk on board an alien spaceship. As recurring dreams assured a 42-month interstellar voyage to explore the vast universe. I am leaving behind all of my possessions to you, as I will no longer require the use of any. Please use the instructions in my will as a guide to help. So in his will, he left his dog to his parents, but he also did a few other things that stood out. First of all, he crossed out the words death and deceased, and he replaced them with departured and departed. He also crossed out funeral because he said he was basically planned on coming back. His parents implied that there would be a funeral if he wasn't planning on returning, so he must be coming back. Well, around 6 p.m., Granger shows up at his normal restaurant in Duncan, where he goes and hangs out and eats. There was a lady by the name of Linda who worked in the kitchen there. Now, she had seen him there all the time, mm-hmm. So she knew exactly who he was. She said she didn't talk to him, but she did see him. She said he was dressed in a brown zip-up sweater, black t-shirt, which he typically wore, blue jeans, and logger boots.
Yeah, what would you wear for such an occasion?
I don't know. He shouldn't dress up. When he left at 6:30, she noticed that he didn't have on his winter coat. For the storm to be so bad, and for it being November in Canada, late November, it was probably pretty cold, and she thought it was odd that he didn't have his winter coat on. You know where his winter coat was?
No.
In the doghouse.
Aw.
He left it for the dog.
Aw. That was nice.
So he leaves the restaurant, and he makes one last stop by Robert's house. Robert was excited to see him. He said he almost felt like that. He said even though he was 15, it was like a little kid whenever Granger would show up at his house. So he said when he saw him, he was kind of excited. He runs to the door. He opens it. Granger walks in, and he says, you know what? It's the day is almost completely gone now. We're not going to get anything done. And Granger said, well, I told you earlier, the aliens are coming tonight. Robert's dad saw this as like a big joke, and he said, well, take Robert with you. He's not going to school anyways. Oh, man. And Granger said, seriously, he got real serious in his tone. He said, I can't. And Robert's dad was like, well, why not? And he said, well, first of all, he wasn't invited. And he said, besides that, 42 months at the speed of light, for me, it would be 42 months. But here on Earth, you will have passed about 150 years.
What?
Yeah, when you go to speed of light, if you go up and was to go speed of light, that's not the same time frame as what's here on Earth.
Oh, dude, I didn't know that.
So when he heard this, Robert knew that he would never see Granger again.
Aw.
Granger said that when he got back, he would come to visit. And Robert knew that he meant he would come to visit his grave.
This is a terrible story. Well, maybe it's not going to happen. Did he just fall into it and just accepted it that was going to happen?
Who, Robert?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You'll see as the story goes on, you'll see Robert's mindset. So Granger went on to say that this would be the greatest thing that ever happened to a human being. He would get to see things that no one else would ever see. And then Granger got in his pink pickup truck. He drove away, and that was the last time that anyone would ever see Granger Taylor. And I'll tell you what happened next right after this quick sponsor break. Tracy, the next morning, Robert was up, 8 a.m., and Granger did not show up.
I mean, how can he show up if he's up in the universe somewhere?
Well, I guess they were hoping that, you know, whatever he thought, maybe he went to go meet up with them. They just didn't show up and oh well, and he'd be back in the morning to business as usual. As it gets later in the day, Robert actually went over to Granger's house only to find out that he never came home last night. And then he finds out about the note and the will. The police issue a missing persons report. They start searching, including searching from the sky. They don't find a single clue. The biggest question, how did his bright pink truck just disappear off the face of the earth? Granger's family and friends were confused about the disappearance, but they had hope that he would be back. Well, Robert said he knew better. For over 3 years, Granger's parents left the door open, hoping that he would show back up.
What a disappointment.
As we were approaching the 42nd month, the city grew kind of anxious. Robert said that he didn't, because Granger had already explained to him that 42 months in space was not the same as 42 months on Earth. Robert did say that it was nice to see the excitement level around town because it did show how many people really loved Granger. After 42 months, his family came to grips with the fact that Granger was more than likely dead. Robert went on with life. His family went on with life. Roger said that he kept in contact with Granger's mother. Tracy, on March 20th, though, 1986, a discovery may give some clues as to what happened to Granger. Or would it?
I'm interested to find out, so hurry it up.
A municipal work crew was out there removing some trees on Mount Prevost, a few miles from Duncan. One of the crew members thinks he sees the sign of an explosion. This was down actually in the forest area. So he reports it to a supervisor. Police are called and they agree that, yep, this looks like an explosion has taken place. They know this because there was a big crater there. They said that there were remnants of a blue truck and a piece that actually had the VIN number was embedded into a tree some 60 feet in the air.
Well, that would do it.
So they knew by the VIN number that this was Granger's truck. But Tracy, what color was Granger's truck?
Pink.
Right. What color truck did they say they found?
Blue.
Corporal Chris Manco of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police confirmed that the truck belonged to Granger Taylor. He said that it was fortunate that the site was even found when it was found, because it was in the middle of nowhere, and basically if this had been years later, the vegetation would have grown up over everything and you would have never known that there was anything going on there. He said someone driving by would have never known that the accident even happened. It would have looked just like any other part of nature. Tyler Hooper is a journalist, and he's investigated this story for years. He said that the blast site was like 200 feet and spread to 600 feet. For those keeping track at home, 600 feet is 2 football fields.
I mean, but how...
Think about that. Think about how big that is.
Yeah, but that's why it's like, I can't believe nobody saw that. I mean, I know it's in the middle of nowhere, but still, that's pretty big.
Well, supposedly some of the debris from the truck, like I said, was 60 feet in the trees. Some human remains were also found. And get this, a piece of sweater that was confirmed by the family to be Granger's sweater. But Robert Keller says that he talked to Granger's mom, and she says, and I quote, "She nor anyone in the family were ever asked to ID his sweater. In fact, she was told that it was probably Granger, and they were closing the case."
Oh, I don't see how they can do that. Well, I mean, I guess if they have the VIN number and stuff like that, I reckon, but.
So let's look at a few other things. The crater, for example. Granger was known to carry dynamite in his truck.
Wow.
He used it on the farm for like getting rid of stumps and stuff like that.
Right.
But most experts say that if the dynamite had been in the back of the pickup truck, it would have blown more outward than downward, because an explosion will take the path of least resistance. So why would there be such a big crater if there was dynamite in the back of his truck? Also, how did a piece of wool sweater last 6 years in the elements in the Pacific Northwest?
That's right. That's right. I mean, I guess it was a UFO that probably picked him up and then spit him out.
So we'll get into more of that. So we've already mentioned the truck color. And yes, there were bone fragments, but this was before DNA testing.
Oh, that's right.
Right before, but, you know, you can't really do much about it. The coroner's inquest said that Granger died from accidental death from an explosion. So the case was closed. The friends and family members don't think that Granger's truck or the bones were found on top of that mountain. Robert said that Granger never owned a blue Datsun truck. He said it was pink, but the original color was somewhat brown. When they painted it, it was like a brown.
Oh.
So there might be an explanation for that, though. Some say that the truck's original color might have been blue, and that's the way it would have been registered.
Okay.
So if they did find a VIN number, it would have said blue if that was the original color. Not necessarily the color it was when they painted it pink. That might have been painted it a different color before that.
I mean, so did they have the whole VIN number? How did that not disappear?
No, they had the little plates and stuff. I guess the part of... Well, all that's going to really come into play here. You're going to see.
Okay.
But as far as like... an explosion that bad would probably take any paint left off of the truck.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So you would have to go by what it said it was registered as.
Uh-huh.
So that might be why they didn't know it was paint, because there probably wouldn't any paint left on the truck.
Well, that's why I was asking about the VIN number, but because, I mean,
Well, they found, I've seen some pictures of some of the stuff that they say they found. They found like an engine block and stuff like that. But the bones that they found were actually two pieces of arm bone. One of them was broken. They said probably from the blast. So I know what you're probably thinking. Why don't they just test the bones today?
Yes, I was going to ask that.
Remember when I said that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police were on top of this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they typically don't make mistakes. Well, in this case, they made a few. For example, they lost the bone fragments.
Oh, okay.
So even when they destroy evidence because it's no longer needed, they still know where it went and what happened to it. It was either trashed or it was burnt. But that wasn't the case here. It was completely lost or misplaced. So if they found what they say they found, where are they? So the next question is, did he have enough dynamite to even cause that kind of an explosion? Robert says that Granger only had one box of dynamite, and he had used some of that already. And he also said that the day that Granger went over to talk to his mother, that he looked around the property. They were trying to figure out, you know, what the hell was going on. And he distinctly remembers the box of dynamite still being in the barn.
Uh-oh. Not in his truck.
Not in his truck. But even if it was in his truck, it would only have been one box. That wouldn't have caused the explosion that they're saying it would have caused.
Mm-hmm.
Police seem to think that it was an accidental explosion. But journalist Tyler Hooper, we talked about him earlier, said that this would be completely out of character for Granger. He was practically an expert with dynamite.
Oh, well, I mean.
Plus, remember, it was pouring down rain. It was the middle of a thunderstorm, you know, major thunderstorm.
Oh, heck yeah. How's that going to survive?
I don't know how you would light it and all that stuff.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there's a way to keep it dry to be able to do it. It's probably not that complicated. But I also do know that when dynamite gets wet, it becomes unstable. So who knows? Maybe that had something to do with it. So what would his plan have been? What was the whole point of going up there? To blow up his truck and walk down the mountain? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So, you know, is he going to take all the dynamite up to the mountain and, or it would seem like an intentional act? Why? Why would you do that? That will always be a lingering question to friends and family. There are definitely some conspiracy theories here. Like, for example, if you found what you say you found, like I said earlier,
mm-hmm.
Where is it? How did a sweater... Why is Granger's mom saying nobody in the family was ever asked to identify the sweater, but police say they did? Why are the bone fragments missing?
Mm-hmm.
And where's the VIN number and stuff that you say you found? Where are the parts of the truck? Nobody really has answers to this stuff to be able to verify. If you've got the VIN number, where is it? And as far as other conspiracy theories, there's been everything from aliens abducting him up on that mountain, like he said was going to do, that he possibly ran away to South America, or he was being silenced by the government.
Why would he go to South America?
Good question, Tracy.
Well, thank you.
Some people say that he was a drug mule. Robert said he had heard several different theories, and the most common is that the government needed his abilities and insight, so they just took him. I mean, it's kind of what they did with German scientist Wernher von Braun after for Project Paperclip after World War II. Or, you know, so he was working for the Nazis, and they said, you know what, we can use this, so we'll just take you over here. So it's not been unprecedented that the government just takes somebody they think they need. But Granger wasn't one to lie. So if it was the government, they feel like he probably would have told somebody and not made up the UFO story. Robert also said that a few years prior to this, Granger had discussed moving to Colombia in South America. He did have some friends down there, believe it or not. And I think this is where all the drug mule talk originated from. So Robert said that there was a lot of money to be made down in Columbia, at least according to Granger.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, the border laws were a lot less lax. He said that even without a passport, Granger could have just driven right across the U.S. border and gotten onto a flight just by saying, hey, I'm from Canada. And they would let you do that as far as just crossing the border. He said so.
So nobody just didn't check?
Well, I think they just said that they didn't care. If you lived in Canada and was going to the U.S. back and forth, it'd be like driving across the from Kentucky to Indiana.
Oh,
you know
okay.
what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if that's the fact or not, but that's what he said. But he said you didn't even need a passport back then. So it was pretty easy to cross the border. So who knows what happened to Granger Taylor? Supposedly they found body fragments, but there's no way to test it. And there's
well, they couldn't anyway if they lost it.
There's no, that's what I'm saying. There's no way to test it because there's no body fragments that they can find. There's no proof that the wool sweater was actually there and they got the color of the truck wrong. And so everything about that is suspicious. So the real question is, did he go with the aliens like he said he was going to? Or was he just having some mental episodes and hearing things and thinking that that's what he was hearing because that's what he wanted so bad? Maybe he just kind of willed it to be.
Right.
And he heard what he wanted to hear.
I just can't imagine, though, he knew he had dynamite in the back of his truck. I can't believe he wanted to blow himself up.
I mean, unless... In his, like you said, he might not have told everything. He might have been told, quote unquote, by the aliens that that's how you get there. You got to kill yourself and, you know, you get rid of your body here on Earth and we'll take your soul or energy or whatever. And that's how you got to make it work. And if he was having mental issues and that's what he believed, then.
Well, there's no fun in that.
No. So I don't know. I'm completely oblivious as to what it is. I kind of want to lean toward that was his body and his truck there.
Because
I don't know why 6 years later the police would want to lie about that.
Right, right. Well, I mean,
what did they have to gain?
Yeah.
By it? You know, it'd be different if it was like a year later and they're trying to get answers and they got pressure put on this 6 years later. I mean, I'm sure people have forgotten. And those people from the municipal crew, they stumbled across something.
Yeah,
I just don't understand how that crater was so big. It's just there is a lot of funny.
I mean, it would be considered big enough for be a UFO, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Like at least the base of it.
I mean, who's to say? Again, who's to say a UFO didn't come down and grab him? And then shoot a beam down there and blow all that up. They could probably do more damage with a beam.
They could have. Maybe that was, no, you said it was a human arm though, right?
Well, that's what they said, but how do we know? We've never seen the bones.
Yeah, it could have been an animal of some kind.
Could have very well been, because it was never tested. They said it was human bone. They said it came from an arm bone. That could have been a Sasquatch.
There's another theory. That's another reason they have to keep quiet. Well, that is a pretty wild story.
All right, guys, that's the story of Granger Taylor. I hope you enjoyed it. I really liked researching that one. I think it's a crazy story. And everybody can kind of place their own opinion on what they think happened on there.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty wild. But if not, that dude had a really, really great imagination.
No kidding. It's a shame to see somebody with that kind of talent just gone, though, at such an early age.
But yeah, that's not right.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and we'll be back to talk about some shows and cruises and stuff like that. All right, guys.
And gals.
Coming up really quick.
Really, really quick.
April 27th. What are we looking at? 3 weeks away? The Casadega Show. More than half the tickets are already gone. Come snag your tickets. Casadega is, I want to talk a little more about it because we don't mention a whole lot about it. It is a spiritualist camp. Everybody that lives in this town are like psychics and mediums. They have the Hotel Casadega, which has a restaurant attached to it. And that's where we're doing the show. So you will actually be able to walk through the hotel, we'll do the live show. They might have some rooms available if you still book. I don't know if they probably book pretty quick because it's known as a haunted hotel.
Yeah, and then like since we've moved here, we've talked to a lot of people and you know tell them about our podcast and everything. And I can't tell you how many people said, "Oh, have you talked about the Casadega?" So you know, now we're really interested in seeing what it's all about.
Yep, and we'll go up there. It's an early show. It's a 12 to 3 show. Us and History Goes Bump. And for anybody who wants to go afterwards, we'll go up and see the Devil's Chair. It's 5 minutes away. And you can almost walk there. We're not going to, though, because it's kind of crazy roads here. A lot of twists and turns. But we'll walk up and check out the Devil's Chair for anybody who wants to do it. Tracy will sit in it.
Yikes.
And
we'll know about all that.
We'll have a blast. And like I said last week, I don't think people realize that Casadega is literally 20 minutes from Daytona and about 30 minutes from Orlando. So you can come up here and go to the show and then, you know, Saturday, Sunday,
go to the rest beach of Saturday, Sunday,
you could go to the beach or go, I wouldn't say Disneyland because that'll get you on maybe one ride. But you got, there's a bunch of different stuff you can do in both of those areas. And the weather is supposed to be really nice. A month from now. I'm just kidding. I have no idea what the weather's going to be. But it's Florida. The weather's always nice.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we got that. And then we've sold a big chunk of tickets already to St. Augustine, also with History Girls Bump. That will be our 8th anniversary show.
Yes. Very excited about that.
And the last one of the year. That's the only 2 shows we're doing this year.
So. Yeah, it is. It's kind of weird.
Unless you go on the cruise.
Right. Oh, come on the cruise, y'all.
Yeah. Come on the cruise. There's a special page at hillbillyhorrorstories.com. You can buy tickets to the other 2 shows we just talked about. And you can find out a lot of information on the cruise, including who to call to book it. And you can still make payments on it for a couple months.
You sure can.
There you go.
That would be amazing. We'd love to meet some more of you people. We met a lot of people on our last cruise. And oh my gosh, what a thrill that was. It was just so much fun meeting everybody. So we hope you guys will come enjoy that with us.
Yeah, it was an absolute blast. And with that being said, we are really trying to revamp our YouTube page. So if you get a chance, Hillbilly Horror Stories on YouTube. I'm putting a bunch of different videos up there. And that's something we're trying to use as a second source of income. So I don't have to work a real job anymore. I learned I don't like that. No, just all kidding aside, it is something that we've been talking about forever doing. And I'm actually taking the time now to put up more content and give people stuff. It's perfect for listening at nighttime. It's not really hardly anything you haven't already heard on the podcast, but still, some people just like to watch videos.
Mm-hmm.
So spread the word and comment. That's what you guys are always asking, hey, what can we do to help for free? And I don't blame you. That's the way I like to help too, for free. YouTube. We will get more views on our videos if you guys will go leave comments. It doesn't matter if you just say hi. The number of comments on videos gets it pushed out to more people, so more people see it. More people see that, the more people that learn about our podcast, and then they'll come listen to the podcast. It's a big vicious circle. So if you want to help out, go to our YouTube page, subscribe, like the video, and make a comment. Whatever you want to comment.
Mm-hmm.
Schleprock should have never been on the Flintstones. I don't care what you say.
Mm.
That's where he was at, right? What was he? It was the alien that was on the front.
Yeah, that little dude. Yeah, with the big head. Yeah.
No.
I don't know. What was Schleprock on?
I can't remember.
I don't remember either.
Maybe Yogi Bear. I don't know. It might have been his own thing.
I can't remember, but.
All right, guys. So that's what you can comment. Go to the YouTube page and comment where Slip Rock was from. So. All right, guys. We love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Have a blessed week.